This is our members hour, the second hour, and I want to thank you for continuing to listen, being part of this, and for your interest in what we do, how we do it, and of course, appreciating the great minds that we do speak with that share their thoughts and research with us. And you don't have to agree with everything that everyone is saying, of course, but we can always appreciate the insight, the perspective, and many of the people we talk to, you can always learn something from, I believe, in a way, by listening to some of these new perspectives. And we always try to hit the most pertinent topics and get to the heart of the matter, of course. And we are talking with Franco Collins about the rise of nihilism, the Illuminati, and basically who is at the apex of the pyramid of control and the real power behind the sovereign military Hospitaller Order of St. John of Jerusalem of Rhodes and Malta. And that is actually their full-length official name, by the way. It's crazy. But we were talking about the Zionists and the madness as well, actually, among some of these people who are part of the game. And I want to ask you a little bit more, Frank, about this, because as we look at this, we can see that there's certainly a lot of crazy people involved in this, or leaders to these deranged psychopaths at the top. And I always wonder when I see some of these people how aware they are themselves, actually, what they're part of, even what type of world they're creating. The lingo and the talk they have by all their speech writers is, of course, to fool us. But nonetheless, we do have realities like mind control happening. We do have realities of people being led blindly by belief and ideologies, which is another form of mind control. So how is this, when we talk about the people that we have been talking about so far, these the pinnacle, the apex of this pyramid, how aware are they really of what they're doing and what they're part of and what kind of world they're creating, do you think, Frank?
Half aware, which again makes it more dangerous. You know, there's been the 20th century, there was a conga line of frauds that came along and recognized pretty quickly when they got to see the elite at play that there is a desperate, desperate need of knowledge and true revelation from the other side. When you own the banks, when you own the mines, when you own the businesses, and you don't have to worry about how much do you have to earn, which most of us have to fight every day to work out how we can survive, then that leaves you free to pursue your indulgences. And the indulgence that has remained the obsession of the wealthy and the elite in the world is and has been for centuries the pursuit of the knowledge of the mind of God. And that path leads people towards the occult. So you've had people like Manly P. Hall in the ages. You've had Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society. You've had all these different groups that have come along, and individuals who have come along and claimed themselves to be Aleister Crowley, claiming themselves to be either the personification of Satan or indirect communion with spirits or possessors of knowledge. And of course, one could argue that the Mormon movement in America was not dissimilar in the formation by Joseph Smith, who claimed to have found these mythical magical gold tablets that the first group of witnesses repudiated. So he quickly found some more. Happened to be his family. It's, oh yes, no, we saw it. But nonetheless, despite the absurdity of the formation, it's a bona fide and very well-funded and very influential group. And they are a central part of this nihilistic madness, this insanity that is pervading the world today. So it's this desperate need for direct revelation that has driven and allowed the fraudsters to step in and do what they've done when people say, God's speaking to me, in the duplicit message that they're also saying that Lucifer's speaking to them. So real revelation, when you strip away all the Saturday night psychics and all the evangelical fundraisers, true revelation is an extremely, extremely rare commodity. And it has, in one argument's sense, it has played a profound influence, at the very least, of the last 100 years of the world, and has played a profound influence on the events of March of this year.
What happened then?
We had a new pope, Pope Francis, the end of the Roman cult, the fulfillment of prophecy back to the prophecy of Zohar and the prophecies of the Revelation of John and the Book of Daniel. 1260, a key number. The age of tribulation is over.
What do you make of the two lightning bulbs, the bolts, I mean, that struck on that very same day? It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Well, I think there were other influences playing the part. And no, I don't think that was harp.
Yeah. Was it God saying, yeah, good, go ahead, or is it two means no?
Yeah, well, two lightning bolts, the Vatican II, you know, the age of personal responsibility. The fact is that the ideas of Vatican II were never implemented. And what the nihilist, the position that the nihilist loves the most is to pretend to be the conservative, to pretend to be the religious. That is where they love to be. And in that form, what they argue is the common good. You see, under the common good, they get to stay on top of the heap.
Well, and let me say this as well, just interject this, Frank, sorry to cut you off, but this is a good point, because as they are claiming that they represent the conservative religious side of things, this is in the name that they're doing all these, you know, stupid things in. This is how they manage to bring that aspect completely down, shatter it so that people turn 180 degrees in the opposite, and they think, well, the enemy of my enemy has got to be my friend, so now I'm on the good side, so don't worry about anything.
Well, this is a stupidity. See, that where these nihilists hide, remember, it's based on ignorance. Where they've got away with it is so long as the common good holds and so long as there is no recognition of personal responsibility, they can keep going.
Of course.
You see, there is a strand that connects the origin of the duality of the world back to the days of the Persian Empire, the Aryan Empire, formed in, Persia in the 4th and 3rd century. And the strand is personal responsibility. Even though the Persian priests created this new Manichaeism cult and argued that the world is ruled and the domain of lower underworld demons, and that heaven is a whole separate sphere, they still based it on personal responsibility. They still based it that the leaders had to be honorable. And, of course, the nihilist, personal responsibility is kryptonite. The minute that personal responsibility is introduced and demanded upon the elite, their game is over, because they live to pleasure themselves. They live for power. They care nothing for the edifice or the shell that they hide behind. So once personal responsibility is mandated throughout the world and throughout their system, then you'll see the rooting out of the nihilists, whether they be cardinals, presidents, leaders of the Mormons, Hasidic rabbi, whoever they are, they will be brought to account. And you'll see them as fraudsters, for what they are.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you just a little bit about the what is on the main control, the main agenda, if that only is control and domination and manipulation of the planet, of mankind. Of course, these are big concepts we're talking about here. These people, I think, are drunk on this power. And you know, as you were talking about, as they, you know, certain indulgences and stuff like that earlier, my mind was also brought to this fact that there's a perversion that seems to sneak in there, what they can have, anything they want. They want to have the unattainable kind of thing, and they tend to go for, you know, immoral things. They go for children or, you know, things like that. So this is like seems to be a side effect of it, unless it's something like that they've been subjected to this themselves through the, you know, through their families or through their some kind of initiations or something like that, and they're simply continuing and spreading this cycle of abuse, if you will. But let's stick to the first part of this. The control of the planet, is that the number one agenda and what they prefer to kind of be focused on, if you will?
Of a nihilist, yes. Absolutely. It's this unsubtle, incompetent, addicted, stupid mind that is the hallmark of the nihilist. And they hide in every organization. And as I said, their most comfortable position is to hide as conservative and as religious leaders.
Yeah.
And their argument, and just to be clear, to find a path through this, because I realize whenever people listen, there are some incredible speakers and some incredible researchers that have their own spin and opinions. And I respect people, anyone who's done research needs to be heard. As I say, skepticism is a healthy skill, a skill that I admire. But if you want, as a way of finding a path through what we're talking about, I mentioned two websites. One was one-evil.org and the other was one-heaven.org. On the site one-evil.org, one of the articles I mentioned is this one on prophecy on the home page. If you open that up, there is a link through that document and through that article to different elements of prophecy. And one of those that I'm referring to is the prophecy of Hasidism, and in particular, their particular spin on the various key phrases of the prophecy of Zohar. See, up until now, and the reason I do that is in the pantheon of the Luciferian satanic cult, and if you think that the Persian duality of the world, where they said the earth is ruled by demonic spirits and heaven is ruled by angelic spirits, therefore, if one wants power, one must honor the demonic spirits, thinking that system really won over in the world and has been around for over 1,400 years, then prophecy that relates to this battle of good and evil has been the central shield and argument, even of the nihilist, let alone those that have a deeper knowledge. Mm. Now that that shield has been removed from the nihilist, now that that argument has been nullified in the armory of the nihilist, the nihilist argues that they have a deeper issue, that there's this deeper unwritten revelation that the world is overpopulated and that they're serving this kind of greater nefarious common good if they bring about a culling, a reaping.
Yeah.
Yes. So
isn't that funny how that works, how like it's through evil deeds that we're going to ultimately create goodness on the earth? Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah, but this is the stupidity that was never written. As I said, it was never written that way. But the nihilist who loves addiction, who loves molestation, who can't eat enough food, who can't take enough drugs, who believes in nothing and believes that they can con the rest of the world through this lie, this insanity, rather than seeing that they have absolutely no clothes anymore because the Illuminati has brought this to an end, the sovereignites, the heads, the prelate has architected the end of their cover, rather than saying, well, the game's up, I better start being personally responsible, they're now still promoting an accelerated agenda where they say, well, no, there may not be any more prophecy anymore, there may not be the third world. But now the argument is this common unwritten philosophy of Lucifer, of Satan, which is it's time to cull the world back to a manageable level. So they're arguing now responsibility. They're insane. They're thieves. They're criminals. They're liars. And they're getting away with it because people fear them. People believe they have power. People believe they, and they misdirect. These people want you to believe it's the Illuminati. They need you to believe. They're not the criminal. It's not evil. It's criminal. You know, the concept and the belief that somehow there is something called unholy is a fraud. There is nothing called unholy. There is either holy and sacred or not. And given that every life form is sacred, you can see the absurdity of the nihilists that got us to believe that. They're not evil. They're criminal. That's the problem. People give them what they want. They need you to believe they're evil to stay in the hierarchy of the world. They need you to believe that.
But they create a kind of a allure around them, like they are obviously more powerful than they actually are, because people generally, they are the ones who give these people the power. They have abdicated personal responsibility, and they look for someone else, a leader, a politician, a, you know, whatever, putting whatever you want there, to be able to, you know, handle their stuff, basically, instead of stepping out of it. So, I mean, how bad will it have to get, do you think, before people wake up to this and see this?
There's more revelation in the covenant of one heaven, in Pactum de Singularis Caelum, than has ever been produced by any of these groups of nihilists in over 1,000 years, 2,000 years. How bad it's got to get? It's got to get to the point that the courts don't even pretend that there's law anymore and just simply say, we're putting you in prison. We don't care.
Well, that's happening now, isn't it? Asset forfeiture and all these things. You just take people's possessions, you slam them in jail, you know?
It's got to get to the point that members of the European Parliament say, we don't care what the people think or even what the government's electors think. We're doing whatever we want. And that the Senate and the Congress say, we don't care. We don't care what the people want. We're doing whatever we want. We're changing the laws. We don't even care what the president says. We're going to change the laws. We're going to water down the Dodd reforms. Mm. We're going to continue to trade on insider trading, and we are untouchable, and you will not do anything to stop us. Until you get to that point, until the people say enough, it's going to get worse with the nihilists, because they're looking and saying, no one's standing up to us. No one's standing up to us, but forgetting that there are two speeds that the Jesuits move, glacial and lightning. And when they're in glacial mode, look out, because the only reason they're in glacial mode is they're preparing.
Yeah. And you don't see it when they're in glacial mode. The it's so slow, and then when they operated so quick that you didn't have time to see that it happened, right? That's the agenda.
Well, I'm convinced that the harvesting that the nihilists still claim that they need to administer will be fulfilled, but they are the ones that will be harvested, not by the people, but by the reestablishment of a sense of moral responsibility amongst the ancient orders that reaffirm their old history. Now, some may say, well, that means we're back to the future and here we go again. But as I said, when you look at Pope Francis and as he is presented in public with the Maltese cross on his vestments as the only cross on his vestments in showing that he serves this new agenda of the Illuminati to cleanse and clean, you are talking about a recognition that nothing stays the same and everything changes, but you're also looking at the only force capable of ending the insanity of Congress, of Senate, of these people in power, of these religious right who are out of control, and that is people who have more power, because the public are addicted to consumerism. They're not changing. You see it yourself. You tell people the truth, they say, yeah, but I like fast food. Give me a beer and a big TV and I'll keep doing what I'm told to do. You're not seeing it from the people. I wish it was from the people, but the people are not waking up to the level that we hope and pray. They're addicted to consumerism and they won't change.
So do you think it's a kind of a self-destruct plan, pretty much, that's in operation right now, and you know, whatever falls first, I guess that will have to be, and the whatever remains is going to take the position of that power again, and they're going to corrupt it until it's ultimately, I don't know, broken up and gone, or how what's the way out of this?
I wouldn't fear for the worst in the sense of what we've seen in the past. The conditions for unemployment and conditions for rallying a war today are actually better than they were in the 30s in Europe. And the people unemployed in major European centres today are much, much higher than they were leading to World War II. The thing is that these nihilist group do not have the intellectual ability to put the pieces in place for global war. That's proven by their stupidity in Afghanistan and Iraq. They said, well, we can do it ourselves. We don't need your help. And, of course, look at the mess they put themselves in. In order to run global wars, you need the Illuminati and the intelligence of the global elite to deal with all the multiple levels of the game. And they're not doing it. They're refusing to do it. So what I believe is probably going to be Possibly, because I don't know. So I'm guessing.
Sure. Yeah.
But what I do believe is probably going to happen is that we're going to see a reaping at certain level where those in the elite are exposed as nihilists and held to account, and that there is a whittling of us all out of this terrible, terrible addiction to consumerism that has allowed us to willingly become dumbed down, to willingly perpetuate and support the nihilist agenda. So I believe those things are going to happen progressively rather than the end of the world, Armageddon, we're all going to die from a disease type fear that so many people point to. And I think the earth itself is also going to intervene in these events.
Anything you want to share about that? Any thoughts?
Well, as much as I do, that wherever you are on this planet, you are witnessing unprecedented climate change. The question is that only man-made, or is it some super weapon, or are we about to witness for the first time in the history of our own species a normal, natural event in the cycle of the Earth, being the movement of the geographic poles? And I believe we're about to witness a between 10 and 15% shift in the position of the North and then, of course, the South Pole, which will put the new pole, based on the movement of the magnetic pole, on the coastline of Russia and the South Pole towards the tip of South America. And when that happens, it won't be the end of the world. It won't happen. In fact, the day that the crust moves should be the most non-event weather day in history, because the movement of the crust isn't to perpetuate disaster, it's to protect the integrity of the crust against the enormous pressures and powers of the magnetic fields internally and externally. So when this happens, yes, we'll have storms. I believe the Ice Age will return to Europe. I believe North Africa will go back to being fertile. America will certainly be warmer and more fertile. Australia will be more fertile. But it will cause significant challenge in a world that is fully interconnected. Yes.
Well, anything could happen at that point too, I guess, even in terms of our technology and all the things that we rely on. If things transform, if you will, fast enough, we might not have much left of the technology that we know now. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't believe it's again promoted as Hollywood being the propaganda arm of the nihilist movement. I don't believe it's going to be the Stone Age where we suddenly are unable to use our computers. What I do believe is it will be the catalyst that the elite in the Illuminati use as the purge of incompetence. You know, think of an ice age. Imagine that there is a massive climactic storm in Northern Europe. You no longer have the luxury of the incompetence of Brussels. You've either got to manage people or they literally will starve to death in emergency measures. So under those conditions, you'll see a purge of the nihilist incompetent. And I believe that is what, if not before, in the next few years when the climate does change, I believe that will be ultimately the catalyst that sees the change. And so I'm not pessimistic to the future by any means, because we are witnessing public display and events that are unprecedented. I mean, we are talking about events that we have not ever seen in history unfolding. And I'm optimistic because of it.
Is there anything else you can share about those things, other things that you've seen both in the news and whatever else you're monitoring on a daily basis, Frank?
Well, all I'd say is, as I said earlier, it's important that we are skeptical. It's important that we question. It's important that we seek multiple sources and that we ultimately trust our own abilities of reason and competence and thought. Having said that, it is also important not to disengage from sense. I do not see in any fashion the signs that were there even 10 years ago of the agenda of some global destruction. I do see the nihilists under maximum stress and unable to cope, and I do see change towards personal responsibility. So I hope people step up to the mark, wherever they are and whatever they're doing and whoever they're working with, more than just simply being entertained and a passenger on this trip. History is not a spectator sport. And I hope that people step up to it more than just saying, I like this because it's interesting, actually participate, learn, step up, become accountable, do something in your own sense, something to make a positive impact. And that's what I hope, because I still see, sadly, it falling on the shoulders of very, very few trying to make a difference, like yourself, with what you're doing.
But they have to be, from my perspective, very, very difficult as well on whose side, if not their own, that they choose to participate on, because there's a lot of traps and other things out there set up for you to be able to relay your energy away. And what I see anyway, Frank, from that is just what you talked about, the level of personal responsibility, not just to be a spectator, of course, but to make sure that you are individually yourself in a position where you can manage yourself, if you will, not being dependent on these systems if and when they indeed, collapse altogether. So that's the,
absolutely,
the participating.
But also not to be gullible, because we spoke earlier on a point where there's been as this knowledge increases and as people learn, and that's what is on one-heaven.org, huge amount of knowledge to learn and reveal finally about trusts and estates and funds and how the foundation of the modern financial world, or the foundations of all financial, was created. And as a result, people have taken that, and there's been some outrageous claims on the internet where people have said, we've created a trust and you're in it and you're all free, we've given you accounts and yada, yada, yada. Well, the fundamental rule of trust is you cannot convey property for which you have no authority. And nowhere in anything have I ever written or ever said that what is involved with Acadia or One Heaven or anything where we claim or I claim property that is not mine. No one can claim my body. No one can claim my mind. It may be a lovely idea, but why am I going to follow someone that has created a cheap and nasty argument that the Roman cult did 1,000 years ago? And yet they've had huge airplay because people are looking to be passive. They're not being active. They're not taking personal accountability. They're saying, great, the Messiah movement, I'm going to be part of that. Well, no. A Messiah movement is not going to solve our problems. I don't care who it is. It's not.
You're talking about the OPPT, the One People Public Trust, right?
Well, yeah. Well, there's an example. I mean, I'm not going to go into the nitty-gritty of it, but that's one example where they claimed to create trusts. Absurdly, they claimed to use private law because the American Legal Bar Institute owns the Uniform Commercial Code. It's private law. It's like an intellectual property. So they claim to use private law to then have a group disown themselves. I mean, it was an absurd, infantile, stupid argument that wasn't necessarily exposed for that level of stupidity. But then on top of it, the thing that ultimately really got my goat was when someone claims property for which they have no authority to convey. I did not give authority to 3 trustees, 50 trustees, or 50,000 trustees to convey property. That's my issue with the former Roman cult or the nihilists today. They don't own me. I don't own them.
Yeah.
But they have no right to move property around a chessboard, which is ultimately property derived from me, meaning my name. Now, they're not the first group to do that, so I granted that. So I don't want to just focus purely on them, but sadly they're not the last. And the issue and the concern I have is how quickly and how largely people jumped on this messianic movement, which was basically, you don't have to worry. We've done all this work. Just trust us. And look, I know it's hard. I live it. I know you know it's hard. I know many who come on and speak with you have the shark bites and the scars to prove how difficult it is in life to find answers.
Oh, yeah.
and live with some integrity.
Yeah.
But I am not a messiah, and you're not a messiah, and the people come on, hopefully, who share with you are not acting that way.
No, they're not.
No messiah's going to help you.
Even if they claim they are, I don't buy it.
He's not the messiah, he's just a naughty boy. Yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, that the system perpetuates the messiah. The reality is the world we live in today, the new age that we are seeing unfold, is personal responsibility. If I do not hold myself accountable, if I am not competent of my own affairs, if my word is not my bond, then no one can save me. No one can help me. And that is really, really hard, very, very hard, because it is totally against the addiction and the image training of consumerism. Consumerism says your word is whatever you wish it to be today. Totally against what we've just said. And yet the world and the challenge we face is I must hold myself account. I must be honest. I must be true. And no one can save me but myself.
Yeah, I've wondered why anyone should abide by rules that ultimately, well, they just was made up by someone who, you know, lived many hundreds of years ago. I see the response maybe to a claim on other people's terms or on their playing field, if you will, is to a certain degree kind of an admission that it holds power. I mean, I can write something on a piece of paper that the Pope is now arrested and my tribunal says that, but it doesn't make it so. He can still walk around freely, right? You know, this kind of, to a certain point, we have to realize that what they have done in the world is that they have the police forces, they have the armies, the military, ultimately, you know, fighter jets and atom bombs at their disposal, and we can, you know, attempt to fight that all we will. I think there's a deeper transformation that have to occur within the people that are part of the system, as opposed to someone dictating something on a piece of paper, if you know what I mean.
Well, exactly. But let's talk about real power, because you've just hit the nail on the head. Let's talk about real power. All they've done is written a claim. That's all it is. All the paper bulls, all the laws, it's all a claim. It is, in many cases, an unrebutted claim. But that's not their power, because they did it first, second, third, or destroyed. It's not their guns and bullets. Once you realize you live more than one life, you come back again, then really, you know, murder and death and all that, that's just
well, there is
short term.
There is this real one line. So, sorry to hold that thought. There's just the one line that someone says. I forget which movie it is, but he's being tormented and completely, you know, tortured to a certain degree, and he's about to die, and he says, "I will be back, and I will be millions." I always like that line. But go ahead, Frank.
I am legion. That's right. Yeah. That is, I am many. And the thing, the point I'm about to say is the real power isn't all of that, which to a world of consumerism that you only live once, so max it out and don't worry about debt, leave it to your kids, just live a great life. And once we all do that, of course, we bear witness to the nihilist who does it more than us. The real power is when a group of people have the intellectual ability to be a leading banker, to be at the top of the tree, to have all that money and all that wealth. They choose not. They choose absolute poverty, not to have more than $5 in their pocket. That they choose not to create their own world and their own illusion, but to respect and honor tradition and with absolute obedience, and that they choose not to go forward and say, I'm a messiah, I'm a god, look at me, I'm the smartest, I'm the first, look, I wrote this book, me, my, I. They choose humility, absolute humility, to the point of virtual anonymity, can't even say it properly, in terms of the public. When you have an army of geniuses that are willing to live and lay down their life in an instant to an idea, that is real power. And that is the latent real power of the existing Illuminati, the existing system. Now, people might look at that and say, well, that's all screwed up and, you know, life isn't about misery. And I'm saying that. But there's a deeper knowledge that these men and women have that many overlook. And it is the life of a simple life. And that it is how we conduct ourselves. And it is the origin of wisdom of the ages, the true tree of life, the true book of leaves, the true Sephiroth, the true Kabbalah, that true knowledge that has been handed down from the time of Egyptians and before in terms of the aspect of true immortality, to remember previous lives, to continue the lessons and learning and not to simply come back like some Groundhog Day movie. Now that is real power. And that is what we need to think about. When we look out at the landscape and all the disinformation as to who's who and who's doing what, if we can emulate even a fraction of that discipline, then we can have profound influence. But if we are suckered into the superficial, stupid and illogical propaganda of the nihilist movement in perpetuating and continuing to be addicts, then nothing will change. We'll just be part of the problem. So I'm hoping enough people wake up to that. I really am.
Well, it's a very good point. I think being manipulated by our fear of death is one of the, you know, biggest problems that there is. And I think that the church, they were smart enough as well to kind of get in on that market, quote unquote, early in the process to control that. They I mean, think about it. The cemetery is right there on, you know, on the church, you know, land, if you will. They ultimately claim that they know what's going on in the afterlife and that you need to live in a certain way to be able to, you know, die the right way, if you will. So I think that's definitely true. We're manipulated by this point that we're either we have a fear that this is the only life, and it's kind of a contradiction to me anyway, Frank, because if people knew that they had multiple lives, then they might, you know, they might have been in a position where they would have wasted one, if you know what I mean. But now when they might have a realization that they only do have one life, they choose to maybe follow someone else and they don't break out of the mold and try to, you know, walk the path of their dreams, if you will. So that's kind of strange to me. But control of death, basically, that's one of the, that's a big point in all this.
And yet one of the most mind-blowing revelations I can share to your listeners is the belief in reincarnation is not contrary to official Catholic doctrine.
No, it was written out through one of their ecumenical councils, I believe, at some point.
It is simply not spoken about. So to believe in reincarnation is not contrary to being a Catholic. You can be a Catholic and believe in reincarnation. It is simply not spoken about. And this is a revelation as to the realization that those that have knowledge of history, that have knowledge of how the world works, that become members of that group we spoke of, the Illuminati, as opposed to the nihilists, know that we have more than one life, know that we come back again.
Yeah.
And so, again, the context of the battle, the history, and the significance of what we're seeing now.
How do you think advanced that, if we can call it a science, reincarnation, that is? Because I've always wondered, you know, why they try to preserve it within, you know, wealth and things like that within the family. I mean, of course, that's explanatory by the fact that it's your, you know, genes that you pass down to your children, etc., grandchildren, and it's, you know, through the generations within your family. But I've always thought maybe there's another reason on top of that, or the fact that it's part of orders or religious doctrines or something like that, that they know maybe where or even who they're going to be. What do you think? Or is it random that they will end up wherever and then don't have a realization that they have lived previously? Well, what do you think is going on there?
Well, you've just quite well summarized all the challenges of the debate on reincarnation for the last 4,000 years. I don't know if I've got enough time to sort of dissemble all of those, but let me just sort of cover a couple of pertinent points. If you take the premise, the opening premise, that our mind is immortal, it's only our body that is mortal. And the reason our mind is immortal is it's never manifest into the mortal form. It's why they can measure every single thing of the brain, but they can't locate the mind. You can imagine a desert as vast as the horizon, and yet there's not the real estate in your brain to physically create that environment, that your mind is non-locational. So if you take that premise that the mind is immortal and therefore can live forever and can connect itself to more than one physical body, that it can return, be seated, then the question is, why don't we remember past knowledge? Or why do we repeat the same faults?
Yeah.
And so this is the central mystery of the tree of life. Can we overcome what appears to be a blockage as to memory of who and what we are, but more importantly, of knowledge hard won and gained in previous lives? Not I'm Napoleon, you know, I'm Caesar or I'm Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're all part of something. I'm saying real memory, real knowledge, not just, you know, suggestive knowledge. You know, how many Mary Magdalens are out there? Plenty.
ISIS, so, or, you know, yeah.
ISIS, I'm ISIS, yep. And blah, 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 I'm right there. So the tree of life at the time of the ancient Egyptians was a complete system of knowledge dedicated to the elite of society, and the elite of society under the Hyksos, that's H-Y-K, Hyksos, yeah, Hyksos, H-Y-K-S-O-S, the foreigners in Upper Egypt, being the lower part there. It's all sounds roundabout.
Oh, yeah, the Hyksos, but yeah, Hyksos.
The Hyksos. Yeah. The key knowledge that Hyksos had was the key to reincarnation, the tree of life. And it was the ability for the most knowledgeable of priests to be reborn knowing who they were. Now, can you imagine to the elite how valuable that knowledge is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Because that is truly the key to immortality. If you can extend the body out 50 years, it's still going to die, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you can remember who you are, and you can be reborn in, and you can take advantage of that knowledge, then that is the ultimate, ultimate, ultimate prize to the elite that know a thing about it. If you're an idiot, moronic nihilist, then it's all going to be physical, isn't it? It's all going to be physical immortality. Yeah.
Well, they are the ones who are working on, you know, uploading their souls to computers and stuff like that. But that's another story. There's like such fear of that aspect of death, or they, you know, they are so devoid of spirit and belief that they, you know,
I couldn't think of a worse hell than being stupid forever.
Jeez, yeah, I know, what a nightmare, huh? Jesus, yeah.
Well, there you go. There is a, on this topic of reincarnation and immortality, there is the clearest distinction between those that know and those that wouldn't have a clue. There you go. Mm. You've just highlighted it.
And just to spend a little bit more time on that realization of previous lives, times, and everything else, that can also be potentially one other explanation as to why certain agendas are actually maintained throughout, you know, thousands of years in some cases, hundreds of years, and it extends further in some cases than that even. That, although it's from one lifetime's point of view, it's like, well, why would anyone do that? Because they wouldn't be able to see the fruits of their labor, if you will. They'd just be a cog in the wheel, although be it some people are happy with that too. But I do believe that among the elite, you know, crowd, if you will, they do have a knowledge that it's something that's going to be able to be beneficial to them later on, hence their discipline and focus, if you will, on a very, very long-term agenda.
Well, the Kabbalah is a corrupted version, and an inaccurate version of the true knowledge of the tree of life. And in the next few weeks, hopefully by the time we get to talk to people, I'm actually going to have on the homepage of One Evil a article and diagram where I reveal the physical location of the tree of life and its original source and structure from the time of the Ixos, knowledge that was lost more than 3,000 years ago and has only just come back into this form. The revelation of the three deaths of the book of life and the tree of life and the three eternal lives and how it all fits together. In fact, we've actually spoken about the three deaths tonight, unwittingly or knowingly, as an integral part of the knowledge of true immortality.
When you speak about the tree of life, are you talking about a physical tree or a symbolic?
Yeah, okay. a physical mapping, a mapping and structure that is actually drawn up in temples in Egypt.
Interesting.
And is stylized in the catechus, the rod and the snake. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is the tree of life, and the mystery of that. And is actually connected to the connection between the rod, the rule of law, the rod being the rule of law, canon being a rod, and hence canon law being the symbolism of that rod and the rod of the Pharaoh in wood, and the serpent being the river. And it is the physical structuring of those connections that you'll see. It's not a myth. It's real. And it is knowledge that was prized as the most valuable knowledge of the most extraordinary priests classes, really, of ancient history, being Egypt.
How did we lose that knowledge? The people who lived at that point in time. How did we lose it?
Because there is and has been a battle going on for a great many years as to the evolvement of our mind and the evolvement of our own culture. When things are good, believe it or not, we tend to tread water. When times are great, when we should be making hay and storing it, we tend to say, oh, we'll do it tomorrow. When times are tough, that's when we learn the most.
Yeah.
And so in that battle, unfortunately, that knowledge was lost in the end of the Ixos culture, in the rise of other cultures that saw the superficiality of the knowledge to be more valuable than the real interpretation. A bit like how Hollywood is happy to pluck out the symbols and play with them when it really wouldn't give a damn as to the origin of those symbols. And again, how people are today. So long as they can live a life of a consumer, they don't really care how the structuring of the financial markets or birth certificates or birth bonds or any of that works. They just want to live life as best they can. So it's really through that internal battle that we lost what is, to the old priest class, the most valuable knowledge there has ever been, the knowledge of how to remember who we are.
Yeah. As you say, when times are tough, that's when people go on a quest, for most cases, to find some answers. That's why it's such a great opportunity at those points. So I'm always, encouraged by that too, to a certain degree. I mean, things do wax and wane. I mean, even as you talked about, Egypt was once a great civilization. A lot of upheaval happened and wars and things, and it was lost. I mean, this is just what happens in human history. It waxes and wanes, right?
Exactly, and we lost even the ability to interpret hieroglyph until the Rosetta Stone, which I still think was there were a few dodgy things with that, but we reacquired an ability to read hieroglyph. So things can be lost. They can be lost for thousands of years, but I do believe we're at a turning point of this issue of personal responsibility. And by the way, personal responsibility is an essential tenet. Knowing who you are and knowing why you are, knowing how you are essential tenets of the Tree of Life and the key to immortal mind. Because unless you know who you are, and this is where the nihilist has no idea, and they don't care. They still believe that they will achieve physical immortality. As we said, an eternity of being stupid.
Yeah. Brilliant.
But for those that have some basic intelligence beyond, you know, the bushes and others, it is realizing that an authenticity must exist between you and the divine. That you can lie to others, but if you lie to yourself, that's where you create the mind virus. And I can't wait to be able to share with people the article on the physical tree of life, where you can see its origin, its location in the Nile, the location of the geographic structure of the rod, the original settlements, the three deaths, the centers of learning, the journey that was taken by the most elite priests to go through this process, how it was mapped out over a lifetime, and whether or not they actually achieved the essence of the tree of life, and why, when it's all said and done, it makes perfect sense.
So people have to keep an eye on the website. Danny, do you know when you're going to present some of that material?
Within the next week or so, it'll be up, absolutely.
So how did you discover some of this? Yourself or listening to other folks and piecing things together or what?
All of the above. I guess after 28 years of reading and researching and 18 years virtually full time.
It
came back to a central point. I mean, the returning point became itself a focus. Who are we? Why are we? What is important? If you know the meaning of enlightenment, then what still is important? Is enlightenment important or is life important? How does one conduct oneself when you have that knowledge? As I said to you, the wisest men and women in the world already live their lives according to the values of the Tree of Life. And I assure you and those that read, that the most powerful man in the world, the prelate of the Sovereign Knights of Malta, has less than $5 in his pocket. I know because I've seen it firsthand.
How have you seen it firsthand? Tell me about that.
I'll leave it at that. But I have I have seen it firsthand.
Okay.
I'm not being sorry when I say that it can come across as being dodgy. I'm not. I'm saying that because a deductive mind can work it out. But who am I referring to? But I won't make explicit because some of this knowledge needs to be earned, and some of it and all of it is given without condition. But what we're speaking about is about whether we are willing to take up the challenge to overcome our own addiction. And sometimes knowledge is just treated with an utmost of disrespect. Sadly, as you know, people will misinterpret stuff.
Yeah.
They'll simply take one excerpt and they'll run with it and they'll ignore everything else we say.
Yeah.
That is the only reason I don't. It's not that I demand people have to go through hoops and loops, but these words have meaning because they come not just from me, but from lifetimes of people who have said the same thing. How we live our lives determines how our lives are lived. And so this is cause and consequence that you'll see in the article when we talk specifically about the origin of the Tree of Life, where it is, what it was, what it meant, and why it's so important even today.
Well, I mean, the journey, as you do as well, is a growth process, the learning process. It's, you know, you discover parts of yourself as you go in the journey. It's not like you just can't, well, give me all the secrets now, and then, you know, that you should be in a position where you appreciate it. And I'm not saying that neither you or me have any of those, you know, quote-unquote secrets, if you will, but what we've, you know, consider to be valuable information-wise, you know, for us, is something that can be, well, it's like the other line from the Bible, right? Pearls before swine kind of thing. It's like, you know, it just because it's appreciative to someone who holds it in a place of value doesn't mean that it's that to another, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Well, look, we're speaking to those that you know, care about the information and care to support what you do, which is fantastic. So this is really an insight, and if you like, an exclusive to them. The knowledge will be in the public domain. But the key, when you do go to the website one-evil.org and look at this, is back to what we said and shared to this audience earlier, and that is when you look to real power, and what is real power? Real power isn't the physical, it's the idea, it's the mind, it's the discipline and the knowledge that we live more than once, and that what we do, in that great line from Gladiator, echoes for eternity, that every thought has a consequence. If life indeed is a dream, then it's thought that is real, and action is the outworkings of it. Intention is what we must deal with. And it deals with everything from manifestation to dealing with problems to how we live our life to the footprint we have to what we learn and what we choose. And half the problem at the moment is filtering through. People say to me all the time, I don't know what is true or false. I say, rubbish. Rubbish. If you settle your mind, if you clear your mind, your instinct will tell you, even before you have to rationalize it. We all have the innate ability to discern. It's just we choose to ignore it.
Yeah. And we might do that for different reasons as well. It might be part of the fact that we do have different paths to walk in these different lifetimes that we you know, spend on this planet, and maybe at some point even beyond that. But, you know, for now, sticking to what we are experiencing here, it might be that, you know, everyone is on a different learning path. Everything will be different in that regard to everybody. And someone is might maybe meant to, you know, live a path on, you know, a completely different perspective, if you will, than another. I mean, that's how do you see, when we talk about the elite and such as well, let's talk about them as being on a life path and journey. I mean, ultimately, they're also just part of a bigger picture, right? They're well, to a certain degree fulfilling
something. I think it's wonderful. I think it's incredible. I mean, I give you another revelation of looking at things from a really, really, really long-term perspective. Remember I said that when we're comfortable, we don't really change?
Yeah.
Only when we're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And another insight is, let's say our construct, the way that we were made, we were made with anomalies. And I've actually had articles written about this, the origins of where we come from. And if we were made with certain paradoxes, that we have this light spirit, but we also have this potentially dark or false spirit inside of us, then, and that both are constrained, then the brightness of the light is diminished by the portal of our own abilities. So unless light and dark grow, our ability to shine is impacted by our own construct. So sometimes light will grow, sometimes dark will grow, but ultimately we grow. So when you look back at this period of great change, of uncomfortable change, and of seeming darkness, we're at a cusp where we may indeed comprehend light, wisdom, better than at any point in our own civilized history. And so it's funny, what an amazing journey, that when we think things are worse for us, really the universe, the grand plan, our life, this journey, this unique journey, may well be the one that gets us to learn more than that comfortable world that we hoped we lived in, or that wonderful lifestyle that we used to remember. So I think it's an incredible journey, and I'm amazed by it every single day.
Well, I agree. It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. This darkness that challenges us makes us indeed step up to the plate and to a different level, and to also ironically then work to be able to be in that position of comfortableness, if you will, that where we're comfortable so that we don't have to do it anymore. But again, that's how it goes. It waxes and wanes. We can't just be, you know, off all the time or on all the time. You know, we have to have, there's a dynamic there, basically.
I absolutely agree. And I'm amazed every day what I learn every day more and more is the wonder of life, the brilliance of life, the wisdom of life. And that's why when people say to me, you know, what is the answer? I say, look, it's not corny. It may sound corny, but really it's the truth. Awareness loves life. That is the meaning of all, literally. Awareness loves life. And that for my journey in my life of life loves awareness, from my perspective, the more I've come to find balance, the more I see the wisdom is life, to love life, to joy life, to celebrate life, to experience life in this vessel, because I will never be Franco Collins again. And whether I be the personification of the divine, to live life, to laugh, to cry, to feel pain, to feel joy, I will never experience the dream more fully than in the form I'm in today.
Yeah, that's wonderfully put. And death ultimately then is part of that system as well, that we do, pass on, we move on to another place. And for me, there's always one thing I've been wondering about with it, which is that conundrum of why we at the same time also then kind of fight death as mankind. We fight and resist for other people letting go, of course, because we miss them, of course. We don't want it to happen. If a family member, a pet or friend, what have you, dies, a spouse, it's terrible, pain. But at the same level, we can understand that it's natural. It's part of it. But yet every fiber of us screams no. It's very strange. It's like strange to me.
Well, the reflex of survival in nature is built into the higher order animals. And again, it's an incredible thing to want to stay living bodies. And you see this with people when they get sick. We think of cancer patients and others, but really it takes a lot for the body to choose to die itself. And it can take months, in case it can take years of literal torture to see the body finally decide that it's had enough. But I do believe that as we learn, we come to find balance in perspective. And it's that perspective that people have at the moment. If I was God, if I was the Messiah, then my life would be better. Why? Why would your life be better? I've come and I celebrate it now, and I see the wisdom of it. I celebrate my fragility. I celebrate the mortality of this existence and the fragility of this existence as Franco Collins, because I am already immortal. I'm already part of the divine, but I will never have this moment, this beautiful, fragile moment again. And I celebrate it as greater than anything I can ever possibly be. A man.
Very good, Frank. Now, I think it's a good point to begin to wrap up on a little bit here. Is there anything else, though, you'd want to, get out or give out before we kind of wrap things up here?
I just want to say, I know you probably get this a lot. You may not get a lot, but I just want to thank you, Henrik, for what you do. And I know people probably write to you and say it, but I want to get it on the record on an audio. It's not an easy process to do what you do. It takes a toll, but I just want to thank you, and thank you for your integrity and what you pursue and what you are trying to do. So to you and to your audience, the honor to speak again, thank you, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Well, thank you so much for that, Franco Collins. Really appreciate that. You're right, though. It has its challenges, but it's worth it, and we couldn't do it without people like yourself, of course, to come on and share your research, your perspective, and ideas and philosophies with us. We do appreciate that. Let's give out your websites again, Frank, so people know where to go when they want to follow you.
Yeah. Well, the two tonight was one evil, that's one-evil.org, and one heaven, one-heaven.org.
And to everyone listening, I just want to say that I value everyone following us at Red Eyes and for being part of this journey here with us, even if it's just for a few months, or if you've been with us for a prolonged time that we've been doing this now. So thank you for listening. We have Anthony Gucciardi coming up next on the program. More on Boston, gun control, the strange, bizarre future of transhumanism, and the bigger picture as well. Thank you, Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, members and supporters of Red Ice Radio. Have a good day or evening, and we will talk to you more soon. Bye-bye.